Welcome to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Greg Corumbus. Our guest in this edition is Yoshio Yosh Nakamura, an American of Japanese descent who was sent to an internment camp as a teenager, but later joined the U.S. Army and served with distinction as a member of the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team. The unit was comprised of Japanese Americans and became the most decorated unit of its size in all of World War II. Yoshio Nakamura was born and raised in California. His family ran a small farm, which helped keep everyone in the house fed during the Great Depression. But as he helped with the farm work, Yosh realized he didn't want it to be his future.
Well, one thing I found out is that I probably should not be a farmer. It's a lot of hard work. But the advantages of farming is that you can produce your own goods to eat, and during hard times it's a good thing. But on a long-term basis, I knew that that hard work kind of field work is not really my cup of tea.
While the Depression was challenging to many families, Nakamura's childhood was quite typical in many other ways. He went to school and had many friends. But that life would change in the aftermath of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
Well, a neighbor came up to tell me that the bombing took place, and I couldn't believe it at the time. And as I was thinking about it, it seemed like a very foolish thing that the Japanese Imperial Forces had done, because the United States was not interested in war at the time, and did everything possible, I think, to stay away from the wars going on in Europe and in Asia. I would say that what happened is that suddenly the country became very, very emotionally involved with the war, and were eager to participate in it. It was a very bad time for us of Japanese ancestry, because people didn't realize that although we had Japanese faces, we had American hearts. There are people who blamed us, you know, for something that we didn't do, especially politicians, the newspapers, all the media. It seems that there would be a rumor about, let's say, Japanese Americans in Hawaii cut the sugarcane fields with an arrow pointing towards Pearl Harbor, which never happened. But that kind of rumor would be spread by commentators and by newspapers as if that were it was the true thing. And so the impact of the Pearl Harbor really affected us very, very severely, because the paintbrush that is used to create the Japanese Imperial Forces was put on us as well. And so for some people, the assumption that because we have Japanese faces, we were loyal to the Emperor of Japan, which was far from it. So I would say that the impact was made a life very miserable from that standpoint. And I was very fortunate that in my high school and in my community that we were accepted as Americans and knew that we didn't have any part of it. So that faith in the in America was instilled as a child and going through school, and it came out very strongly in a personal behavior standpoint with my friends. So to give you an example, when I was in high school, I was in the 11th grade, and I was elected into an honor society called the Lions Squires. In February of 1942, just a few weeks after the Pearl Harbor attack, The students in the Lions Choir elected me president. And so apparently at that time, the fact that I had a Japanese face, but they knew I was an American, and they showed that much confidence in me. And as a result of that and many others, I had great faith in America, that whatever was being done at that time will be seen as a kind of a black mark, and that if there are some wrongs done against us, that they'll realize it was wrong.
But in early 1942, President Franklin Roosevelt changed Nakamura's life drastically by ordering Americans of Japanese ancestry living along the West Coast to be moved to internment camps. But even as his family and others suffered, Yosh still believed strongly in the promises of America.
It did happen in February 19, 1942, when President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, authorizing the incarceration of people of Japanese ancestry, whether Americans, whether they're Japanese or non-aliens, using a euphemistic term to disguise the fact that American citizens are involved as well. And so the executive order allowed the Western Defense Command to incarcerate us. And I'd say that my faith and my friends and the country made me feel that eventually the country will discover that that was a wrong decision, that was that it will correct itself somehow. And it did come to pass with the Civil Rights Act of 1988, when President Ronald Reagan signed the apology, voted by both houses of Congress, apologizing for our incarceration.
For Yosh and his family, it meant living at an internment camp in Gila, Arizona. And as appalling as the situation was, Nakamura says he and the other students tried to make life as normal as possible.
And I was involved with helping this barrack classroom where we were having our high school classes to make it as normal as possible. And so I and some others developed student activities, and we tried to make the atmosphere as normal as possible. If you can imagine that in a desolate area in Arizona, where the only friendly thing was the saguaro cactus.
But it was hard to ignore the reality of their situation. The United States government was rounding up Americans of Japanese descent and holding them against their will. It's clear the pain of that experience is still vivid in Nakamura's mind.
Well, I was there from 19, well, we were entered in 1942. I started to, in Tulare, California, where we were sent there by train, and I would say that it was probably the most humiliating experience of my life, to come off of the train and having and walking from the train station to Tulare Racetrack. And all along the way, there were these soldiers with fixed bayonets. And I can still hear young children asking their mothers, why are these men out here with their rifles or guns? And where are we going? And of course, we all wondered where we were going. And when we got to the racetrack, we noticed there was barbed wire surrounding the racetrack, and there were guard towers up there. And so when we got in, we asked, why do we have guard towers? And they said, well, it's for your protection. But if you looked up there, you'll see that the soldiers who were manning the towers are facing inward, not outward. And the searchlights at night were inward rather than outward. So it was just a way of trying to sugarcoat the infringement of our rights.
Soon enough, the opportunity to join the war effort came to Japanese Americans. We'll pick up Yosh Nakamura's story there when we come back. I'm Greg Corumbus, and this is Veterans Chronicles. This is Veterans Chronicles. I'm Greg Corumbus. Our guest in this edition is Yoshio Yosh Nakamura. He's a U.S. Army veteran of World War II who served with the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team. Just before the break, Nakamura described the indignity of being kept in internment camps by the U.S. government. Soon, he and other Americans of Japanese ancestry were old enough to serve in the armed forces. Nakamura says he and many others saw that as a perfect opportunity to prove their loyalty to the country they loved.
Yes, I would say that it was something we Nisei, Japanese Americans, second generation, felt the need to do. It was just, there was so much propaganda against us that we had to prove that we were Americans and that America is something we will protect. So when a loyalty questionnaire was asked of us, would we serve in the armed forces of the United States and be and go wherever ordered? I don't know how many people today would say yes to that question if they were imprisoned for what they look like. Not what they did, but what they look like. So I felt that there was a need for us to show our loyalty. So that's the reason that I said, yes, I would serve in the Army or the Armed Forces of the United States and go wherever ordered. There was another question that really puzzled many of us, and after some examining of the question, I realized it's the attitude that the person making up the questionnaire had assumed, that that all people of Japanese ancestry held allegiance to the Emperor of Japan. And they asked us, will we forswear allegiance to the Emperor of Japan? And of course, we didn't swear allegiance to the Emperor. So how can you answer that yes or no? But we figured that, yes, we will forego it if that's what they think we had done. So I would say that the fact that I said I would serve in spite of the fact that we were imprisoned in this concentration camp and denied the civil liberties of all Americans, that we just needed to show that we were really a loyal American. So that's the reason I said yes. And I think that's one of the reasons why the 442nd became such a decorated unit. There was a higher purpose in fighting for the United States. It wasn't only for the country, but to show that we are loyal Americans.
These Japanese Americans would not be fighting in the Pacific. Instead, they would prove themselves in Europe. After joining the Army, Nakamura and the others were off to training. And just as they were supposed to head off to war, they were postponed by an unexpected enemy.
Yes, I was in the infantry. I reported to for active duty in Fort Douglas, Utah, and sent to Camp Landing, Florida, for training. And I was trained to be an infantryman, shooting rifles and, you know, crawling on the ground and all that sort of stuff. I thought we were trained pretty well, except when you get into battle, you learn a lot more from experience. There were enough Japanese Americans to form another replacement unit because the 442nd had suffered so much in casualties that they had to be replaced, almost 2.5 times the size of its original size. So I was in this group that was trained in Camp Landing, and I'd say that one of the great things that happened to me while there, one of my friends from El Monte High School, who had been a sort of mentor to me, a guy named Bob Berlin, was training dogs in near Jacksonville, Florida. We got together and we decided to meet there, and I went to a cafe in Jacksonville and decided to have a little breakfast before meeting with Bob. And when I went up to pay the cashier said, "You see that man walking down their street?" I said, "Yes." "Well, he paid for your breakfast." So that was, you know, was a really a morale booster for me. wasn't exactly the most pleasant place to be for training, swampy, and rained about every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We were ready to go overseas. If you can imagine, if a person in the group having measles, and then the second person getting measles, and so every morning we'd have to undress part of our bodies, show the officer we don't have measles, and we were either sent to the our barracks or back or to the hospital. So enough of the fellows got measles so that the whole unit was quarantined. And it kept us from going overseas. And it may be that measles may have caused the good fortune that I'm still here. So sometimes illness of some kind has some consequences that you can't predict.
When we come back, Yosh Nakamura takes us into the fierce fighting against the Nazis in Europe. Stay with us. I'm Greg Corumbus, and this is Veterans Chronicles. You're listening to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Greg Corumbus. Our guest in this edition is Yoshio Yosh Nakamura. He's a U.S. Army veteran of World War II who served with the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team. After infantry training and enduring a measles outbreak, Yosh and his unit were finally off to Europe to help free the continent from the grip of Nazi Germany. They landed to a warm welcome in France, but were soon fighting their way up the cold mountains in Italy.
Well, I was in Le Havre, France. That's where we landed. Unfortunately, because we were delayed in the transportation, it took us a lot longer to get there because by then they sent us on these Liberty boats, and I got seasick just looking at the boat. So it took us quite a while to get to Le Havre. But from Le Havre, one of the great experiences was the USO welcoming us, you know, and serving coffee. And then we were put on cattle cars. European car, you know, trains are smaller than the US. And we were sent by cattle car because it was kind of a disguised way of getting there, so no one would know the troops were in the cattle car. And so I joined the 442nd in southern France. We were patrolling and occasionally being shot at along the Italian-French border, and as going up north. So we were assigned to make sure that no one crosses the border. General Mark Clark, who had commanded the 442nd in Italy, and the 442nd had established such a tremendous record that he outranked all the other generals around because he wanted them back to Italy to break the Gothic line. And as a result, we were put on landing crafts, and we were asked to remove all insignias showing that we were part of the 442nd. And his reasoning was, if the German High Command knew that we were going back, they'll fortify their units in Italy a little bit more. So we went in a very secret deployment back to Italy, and we were assigned to knock out the outposts on Mount Folgorito and other high ground, because our forces were kept from marching north because the outposts up in the Mount Folgorito and others could see any movement and they would shell for about a half a year. So we were assigned to knock out those outposts, and imagine trying to climb about an 80-degree climb up the mountain in total darkness and silence. The paths were very, very narrow and slippery and rocky. And we were very fortunate that Italian partisans, who were very anti-fascist, were eager to help us. And they knew the pathway up and down. And so they led us. And the only way we knew we're on the same pathway was by touching the fellow's backpack in front of us. Because otherwise, if we made any noise at all, the German outposts could just fire down on us. And part of it was mined, and it was very dangerous. If you fell, you'd not make any noise. And very fortunately for us, one of my buddies was in front of me, and he thought he was leaning against the cliff wall, and he was on the other side, went down. And fortunately, the pathway was not too far down, and his base plate of the mortar was heavy enough that he had to land on his back. He was not hurt. So we climbed up, and we were able to surprise the outpost and knocked out quite a few machine gun nests and mortar nests and whatever.
It's common military knowledge that the force on the high ground has the advantage. So how did Yosh Nakamura and the others in the 442nd manage to defeat the Nazis while climbing the mountains?
All I know is I was scared to death. So I didn't know that I would make it. And so the history of the 442nd and their determination to say that there is nothing that's impossible, and my faith in my life and my God and the strength that I thought I didn't have, we managed to climb up. So it was a very, very difficult time and probably the first time in my life that I thought maybe my life isn't going to be quite as long as I thought it should be. If anything happened, if there was any noise, the machine guns could be pointing to us right away. And fortunately, I think the enemy didn't think that we were dumb enough to climb that mountain. So we surprised them. And in about a half an hour or so, we were able to knock out quite a few. But it was a dangerous place, and one of our soldiers, Sadao Munimori, was given the Congressional Medal of Honor because there were grenades being thrown at us, one bounced off his helmet, fell on the ground, and he bounced on it to save the lives of his two buddies in the, in the trenches. And so he was the first person in our company, or in our battalion and regiment, to receive the Congressional Medal of Honor. But altogether, 21 received it, someone later. So it was a difficult time. And Senator Danny Noe, who was one of those in the march up the to break the Gothic line, was shot and lost one of his arms. And he was planning to become a surgeon or a doctor, and certainly followed up his plans. But he became a senator, and he made a tremendous contribution as an American, and as a senator and as a veteran. Just a terrific person.
The 442nd ended up seeing some of the most intense combat of World War II as it battled the Nazis in the mountains and beyond. Nakamura says the fighting he witnessed and took part in was far different than how Hollywood depicts war.
Well, I'd say that don't equate combat with the things you see in the movies. The people who have experienced having buddies shot or wounded or killed, many of them will not be able to talk about it very long. And it's a very terrible thing to be involved in. And it's something you have to do if you're a part of the army and you're in a war. And most of us believe that people ought to be given a chance to live. But then if it's your life or theirs, then it's a different thing. So I would say that if it's possible to avoid armed conflict, I would recommend that and try to find other solutions. Because some people who are directing these things, who have never experienced the pain of being in battle, may not think how devastating it could be, not only for the soldier, but the families and their friends. So I would say that if it's possible to avoid armed conflict and find some other solution, that's much better.
After the Nazis surrender in May of 1945, America's war focus turned entirely to the Pacific. But for Yosh Nakamura and other Americans of Japanese descent, the chance to fight against Imperial Japan never materialized, and the reason they would not be sent could not be more ironic.
Right after the surrender of Germany, there were recruiters from the military intelligence school, the service, and they interviewed us, and they came to me and asked me some questions, and the interrogator said, "That's the trouble with you guys. You're too damn American." We didn't know enough Japanese language, but ones who did served heroically in the Pacific War. There were 6,000 Japanese Americans who helped decode, interpret things, take documents and interpret them, interrogate prisoners and all this, but they were not told to say anything for, I think, 50 years or whatever it was. I didn't know about many of what they did until I met some of the fellows who had served in the Pacific at the Congressional Gold Medal Ceremony. That was in November of 2011.
That's right. The same government that deemed Americans of Japanese ancestry such a threat to this country that they were not allowed to stay in their own homes back in 1942 decided that the 442nd was too American to be of strategic value in fighting the Japanese. In any event, the atomic bombings of Japan in August 1945 brought the war there to a close. For Nakamura, it was a tremendous relief.
Well, that was a wonderful thing because that meant the cessation of war all over the world. So I think that it was a great thing for the U.S. You know, a lot of the Japanese soldiers didn't think the Americans would be very kind to them. And so our military intelligence service people had to go and talk to them and say that you've got to help your families back home, that the war is over, you know, and that you should go back and rebuild your own country. And so there is nothing really glamorous about war, and especially how we ended it with the two atomic bombs. That, you know, you think about the Holocaust and how Germany had treated Jews, and which seemed very inhuman. And of course, you look at the bombing, this radiation that spread, hitting innocent people, women, children, elderly people. You know, I understand why that had to be done, but it just horrifies me to think about what pain people had to go through when they were exposed to all this radiation. And, you know, it was just a terrible thing. I don't see any really glamorous thing about the war. So, but I'm, you know, was pleased that we were able to end the hostilities and that had a period of relative calm, with the exception of a little bit of the conflict with the Soviet Union.
Many members of the 442nd were decorated for their valor in World War II, including 21 who received the Medal of Honor. As Nakamura mentioned, the formal apology for internment would come in 1988. And in 2011, Yosh and the other surviving members of the unit received the high honor of the Congressional Gold Medal. At that same time, Nakamura also received a Bronze Star for his actions so many years before. He is very gratified to see America's deep appreciation now for the service and sacrifice of the men in the 442nd.
Very pleased that there are several reasons. Number one, there has been an increase of anti-Asian sentiment because of the virus that has spread, and some people calling it the Chinese virus and Kung Fu, and trying to blame Asians for the spread of the virus. The other thing is that the Congressional Gold Medal gave recognition to the contributions of Japanese Americans during World War II. And again, recently, the U.S. Postal Service recognizes the contributions of the Nisei soldiers by issuing the Go For Broke Forever stamp. And it came at a very good time, and it's certainly a recognition of what Japanese Americans did, and I think it really opens up the idea of being very proud of being Japanese Americans, Asian Americans, and as Americans. So I would say that a couple of months ago, our local newspaper, the Whittier Daily News, had a big spread about the 442nd, showing, you know, the 21 Congressional Gold Medals, or Congressional Medal of Honor, the fact that all the Japanese Americans who served in World War II were given the Congressional Gold Medal, and you know, about 9,000 Purple Hearts and over 4,000 Bronze Stars. The 442nd and with the 100th Battalion became the most highly decorated unit in American military history for its size and length of service.
Yoshio Yosh Nakamura interned in the early days of World War II and later a decorated member of the U.S. Army's 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the most decorated unit of its size in World War II. I'm Greg Corumbus, and this is Veterans Chronicles. Hi, this is Greg Corumbus, and thanks for listening to Veterans Chronicles, a presentation of the American Veterans Center. For more information, please visit AmericanVeteransCenter.org. You can also follow the American Veterans Center on Facebook and on Twitter. We're at AVC Update. Subscribe to the American Veterans Center YouTube channel for full oral histories and special features. And of course, please subscribe to the Veterans Chronicles podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and please join us next time for Veterans Chronicles.